Welcome to the Combat Morale Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The Combat Morale Podcast explores what motivates people to fight or not fight in armed conflict. A quick disclaimer before we get to the action. The views expressed by any of the guests on the podcast are purely of a personal nature, do not represent the views or opinions of any organisation or government. With that disclaimer out of the way, it is Season 2, Episode 9, and on today's programme, I talk to author, scholar and soldier, Colonel John Spencer, about his recent book on connected soldiers and morale in urban combat operations. John spoke to me from his home in the United States. John, welcome to the Combat Morale Podcast. Now, before we start, I must give a disclaimer that the views expressed in this podcast are personal and not the opinions of the US government, the US military, or any other US government agency. With that disclaimer out of the way, could you start by introducing yourself and telling us about your interest in morale, motivation, and the urban space?
Sure. I'm John Spencer. I'm the chair of urban warfare studies at the Modern War Institute, which is a research center at the United States Military Academy. So I got interested in morale and motivation and cohesion, you know, simply as a soldier, but also in reflection of my 25 years as an infantry soldier and my two combat experiences. I just learned to ask questions, and I started asking questions about these things that we talk about, but sometimes are either taken for granted or not understood. I got into urban warfare later in my career as I started researching. I worked for our chief of staff of the Army, the head general of the U.S. Army, and was researching megacities. But again, started looking reflectively about my own career in Baghdad and places like that. And I started researching, writing, and I've been thinking about urban warfare for almost a decade now and have a dream job where I get to travel the world and go into combat areas like I recently came back from Kyiv studying the Battle of Kyiv, which was just a major historic urban battle.
So let's start with your reflections on morale and vote and motivation that you write about in your recent book, Connected Soldiers, plug there. You did two tours of service in Iraq, firstly as a light infantry platoon commander with the US Rangers, and secondly as a company commander with a mechanized unit of Bradley fighting vehicles in 2008. Taking your first experience in 2003, what was morale like amongst the men you commanded, and what motivational factors underpinned their will to fight?
Sure. So, yeah, I jumped into Iraq as a part of a parachute unit, the 173rd Airborne out of Italy in 2003. You know, it's hard to summarize what are the motivations and morale that underpinned soldiers fighting in war. And that's what I learned really researching it. It actually starts to interweave, and there's lots of things going on. I can say that as a parachute organization, getting the opportunity to jump into combat, which, you know, a lot of our historical understandings of war, our historical beliefs of war, are wedded in the past. So we have as a parachute guy, we had a strong connection to the Greatest Generation, right? The D-Day jumps and things like that. So I can definitely say our emotional and mental state, right? So if I break apart morale from motivation, you know, the motivation and the morale were both high, right? Our mental state was very high as we were basically excited to be jumping into combat, to finally put into work what we have been training for years, some of us for careers, and understanding that we had high confidence in our skills and all these things interweaved. But as we jumped in, you know, highly motivated in our motivations on why we were there fighting. And I've learned that that's different for each soldier. But as you know, in Connected Soldier, I try to pull apart my own feelings, but also the research. So I'm a geeky academic in that sense. And lots of people have done extensive, massive research projects to understand why soldiers fight. Right. And that can be complex, their motivations, their morale, their cohesions. But the number one answer to that question across time has always been they're fighting for each other. They're fighting for their soldiers to the left and right. That's not to say that they're not in the military for a complex reasons, right? Belief in freedom, human rights, independence, to fight evil, you know, every motivation. But when it comes down to on survey questions of American military, British, German, you name it. The reason that they face the horrors of combat, the dangers of losing your life, is for the people to their left and right. So that really, you know, caused me, I ended up calling it the Band of Brothers effect. But in 2003, jumped into combat, motivation, morale, cohesion, everything was high. I was a new officer. I'd taken a unit that had been trained by somebody else, but you could tell they were cohesive, highly motivated, disciplined, all these factors that interweave into what creates combat effectiveness. And we started the journey.
Now, turning to your experience in 2008, this was very, very different. You, if I'm correct, ended up commanding a unit with major morale problems that had a direct impact on their operational capabilities. Can you tell us what the problems were and how you sought to remedy these motivational issues that you encountered?
Sure. So let me start with in 2008. So I talked about 2003, right? The announcement that we're going to enter Iraq, topple the regime, doing it for complex reasons, but soldiers following that motivation and morale. Well, when I returned to war in 2008, I was flown in as the captain to take company of a struggling unit. But to be honest, it was a different war. It was fighting a counterinsurgency, and it was a different army at this point. This is the height of what we call the surge. The U.S. military had been fighting for a long time in Iraq at that point. The ability to get soldiers to join the military was under strain. Soldiers weren't allowed to get out of the army at this point. It was called stop loss, basically almost like a backdoor draft where soldiers join the military, do their service, and then expect to get out, but told that they can't because the army needs them. Well, you can see how that, you know, a really tough mission, as in a counterinsurgency trying to create a democratic Iraq against a enemy hiding within the people, an army under strain where some of the soldiers don't want to be there. They were told to get out. They don't understand the mission. And then, you know, getting down to the actual unit I led in 2008, the leadership had allowed the unit to fall into a really despair, like all the normal systems that would be there, discipline, leadership, teamwork, cohesion, had been allowed to atrophy, and they had just been attacked by the enemy. And all these factors will, you know, of course, impacted every individual soldier's morale and motivation, to include the morale of the group as a whole. They viewed themselves as a black sheep. And I was put in as a you know, soldier, as a commander, and I'd been in the military for a long time, so I immediately recognized major issues in when I was talking to soldiers, when I watched soldiers talking to each other and trying to engage those relationships between the soldiers, when I watched how they went out and operated. So it was a really bad. So to say morale was low is pretty straightforward. They had just been attacked by the enemy and had a huge catastrophic, you know, a really bad damage to where they were living. The enemy had dropped massive bombs on them, which is, you know, which is not abnormal in war. You have setbacks, you know, ebbs and flows of what I call morale, right? Which is, you know, a mental and emotional state. Of course, when you have a loss, that's going to be low, but that doesn't mean that a unit would just sinks into despair. So I came in at all this. They had just been knocked down and they were having problems getting back up. But I knew that morale, motivation, cohesion, all these things exist within a military system that has been evolved over centuries. And we do things sometimes we don't even know that they have cohesive or motivational properties. We just do them because we're in the military, right? We sleep together, we eat together, we talk about what we're going to do for the day. So I had to prioritize this big list. So I started with there are actually different forms of cohesion. One of them is called task cohesion. One's called social cohesion. I understood that the unit was really struggling with task cohesion. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. And that was really impacting their motivation and the morale. It was having everything. So I set that to be the number one priority as a commander, was to get them to a shared understanding of what they're supposed to be doing every day and overall in Iraq. And then I started working on leadership, events that would build cohesion, like eating together, taking care of your equipment together, and gradually tried to rebuild them as a functioning, cohesive, highly motivated team, which is not an easy task, but we started to see quick improvements.
I think one of the really interesting things I found about Connected Soldiers were your comments on technology and how that shapes the will to fight. How did the developments in modern communications, digital technology and social media shape the morale and motivation of soldiers in 2003 against soldiers in 2008?
Right. So this is why I wrote the book, because I wanted to show the evolution of the world changes. So does war and so does soldiering. In 2003, when we deployed, it was a complete cut from the outside world, from our families, from all other forms of social support. And you basically deployed with this wartime family. And that's why that what I call the band of brothers effect starts to happen when you build such strong relationships with each other. That it becomes your family in war. And that was in 2003. We wrote letters home. Maybe you called home once every month or two. There was no email. You really spent time writing, and I spent a lot of time writing. And of course, soldiers want that connection. Every soldier is a complex being of motivations, like why they're there, why they're excited about the day or not. The things that boost morale, which we know historically, like good food, mail, music, like these things that we know that boost people's emotional states, team singing together, these really powerful things that we know that lift morale in war. Well, when I went to war in 2008 and took this company, that they were a complex group, right? A team, but they also had immediate access outside of their team. So every day they could come back and get on the internet, get on a cell phone, no matter what happened that day for us. And we had some really bad days. The soldiers could come back into their little combat outpost and immediately get online, because they want social support as well, and look to their families and give updates to their families. So I saw in 2008 that was having an impact on the team's ability to form their wartime family. It was also impacting their day. Every soldier individually different, right? So now soldiers, there is no more separation between home and war, their combat mission and their home mission, you name it. So they have a foot in both worlds, which has both positives and negatives, but just common sense, it means that home can impact their mental and emotional states in war, right? So I give examples in the book of soldiers receiving bad news, which isn't new in war, but receiving it immediately as it's happening. Like a soldier whose pregnant girlfriend is overdosing on drugs, and it just crushes him emotionally, like it would any of us. And he's not able to perform his part of his team, right? They only work together, and this is how we understand in team building, it only works if everybody's doing their part. Well, he had received information from home because of these new connections and wasn't able to be a part of the team, which is fine. The team takes care of itself. But now, and that was 2008. And I actually even talk about later in the book where my wife goes to war and I'm at home in 2018. And the connections are even more instantaneous. I mean, the kids could, all three of my children could talk to mom about every stress of every day, good and bad, every day, almost every day. And clearly that's changing how we maintain all these things that we know are important in war: motivations, morale, cohesion, teamwork, all that. Of course, if we introduce more of the other elements of the external environment, it's going to change the way the war experience happens for the soldiers.
So, I mean, you've outlined the positives and negatives. So how can modern military authorities manage or control the benefits or negative aspects of this new technology in current and future conflicts?
Sure. So step one is almost like alcohol, step one of alcohol, alcohol treatment is to recognize that you're not going to control it. You have to live with it. You have to operate within it. So what I have recognized as a military leader, and what I tell others, is that you're not going to control this new complex world of complex online and physical connections. you have to operate within it and understand how to get individual soldiers or team members, keep them connected to what matters most when it matters most. So in, you know, to put realistic terms on that, is that not all time spent together with people, with friends, with teammates is vital. But there are some moments that are very important to building cohesion, to increasing the motivation of the team and the morale, to keep morale high. And it's on leaders to understand what those moments are, right? So in the military, we know that, you know, doing hard exercise together is really, it both sucks and it has these other properties of bonding the group because everybody survived that shared hardship together. But we also know that just spending quality time, which as a father, I know that that's important, right? You can be present. You can be there, but you're not present. Quality time in team building means, like, if you're eating together, then you're talking to each other. Or if you're, for us, like in combat, if they had just experienced a really stressful event, that I had to recognize as a leader when they came back from that, the most important time of the day was that time that they had just come back together, where they needed to process it as a group. They experienced it as a group. They need to process those events as a group, and that will further bond them. It will still level the bubbles of every individual's emotional state, mental state from that event. So really, that's how the only way this works going forward is understanding what moments matter most to keep all these things that we know are important. So we're more connected in today's world than we've ever been in human history. But in some terms, we're also more alone. And the worst thing you can do as a society and as a member of a military, but it applies to a sports team, to the military, the worst thing you can do is have a group of individuals. So every individual lives within their virtual physical world at the same time, but they're not a group. So that's the challenge going forward. Not saying it's not always been a challenge, but now that the world is different, so the world has to change, and so does the military.
Let's turn to your thoughts on morale and urban combat. I know you've written a great deal of this, and listeners might want to look at your biography and bibliography on the website. You've also written recently the mini manual for the urban defender, in which you state that morale is important. So how critical is morale in determining the outcome of urban combat vis-a-vis other things like mass technology and other factors?
Yeah, so I think it wasn't me, but we always like to steal quotes that simplify the complex, right? So Napoleon said that the moral is 3-1 to the physical. You can reword that a few ways, but anybody who's ever served in combat knows that the individual soldiers and the group's will to fight is more important than any weapon system, any numbers on paper, anything. And the will to fight is the combination of morale, motivation, and cohesion. So I wrote this book with no affiliation, right? Not as a member of the U.S. government or anything. I wrote a book called The Mini Manual for the Urban Defender for civilians in Ukraine being overwhelmed by Russian invaders. Because what you tell a civilian with no military experience is a little bit different than what you tell to somebody with, you know, a lot of military knowledge. And what happened in February of 2022, this year, is that Russia invaded. The population was asked to rise up by the president, like resist, and they did. But in the mini manual, I talk about things like form a group, right? If you're alone in combat, then all your fears and your questioning of your motivation to be there and your belief that you can actually have an impact, your confidence, which we know are all important in understanding morale, will be less if you're not a part of a group. But then I also talk that will to fight is makes them more powerful, because combat is a lot about your mental state, your belief that you can win. And we know that. So I write in the book that's as important as any weapon or, you know, organization. Sometimes you even fear just like, oh, the Russians or the, you know, whoever, because we have these ideals in our brain. But in the book, I talk about how that morale and forming a group is their superpower. And it has been shown in Ukraine, despite everybody's odds, but everybody like you and I who study morale and motivation know that, oh, they had a chance. They had a huge chance. When you look at the opposite, which is a Russian soldier who is not told where they're going, doesn't really know why they're fighting. Their officers beat them, you know, all these different things that impact an individual and a group's motivations and morales. They're almost already the underdogs, and the extremely motivated Ukrainian military and civilians have this superpower, which is that unifying will to fight.
Taking the perspective of the urban defender, say, of a given urban space, does the nature of the built environment enhance or degrade their will to fight?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, combat impacts every soldier's and every group's will to fight. And it can, but urban combat, unlike any other environment, is the hardest to ask soldiers to fight in. The physical terrain hides each side. The weapons don't work the same. There are civilians present. The horrors of combat are amplified in urban terrain. It makes fighting harder. So it really starts to degrade on all those things that we know are important. That, let's say if you were just in the open field and like shoulder to shoulder with somebody, we actually know in the history of combat that shoulder to shoulder means something, because you know that person's there, has your back. There's almost less thinking. The urban terrain is so complex that it highlights your weaknesses. It highlights the difficulty in doing whatever it is, the task you want to do. And that's why I spent so much time studying it, is that it is the hardest place on the planet to fight. And it will pick at your motivations and your morale. If you're attacking into the urban terrain, you're really at a disadvantage because you can't see where your enemy is, right? And this is, you know, that element of morale is confidence. You have to have confidence that you can achieve, win, that you won't die. If you're entering the urban terrain, you just entered a maze of concrete where every window is a potential sniper, where you really start to break down. And if you don't have a lot of confidence that you can win in urban terrain, so you can see why it really, really impacts the soldier's will to fight.
So if I'm an attacker of an urban space, what can I do to protect my morale, but also attack the defender's morale?
Yeah, so usually why, because militaries want to engage their enemy as far away as possible. It's just basic tactics. But the urban terrain makes that really hard if you're attacking. But one of the ways you can try to attack the defender's capabilities is to strike them with fires as far out as possible. You need superior intelligence to be able to do that without a bunch of war crimes and being viewed externally, which does matter to the soldier, being viewed externally as the kind of a war criminal, you know, breaking the war. These play into it. So if you're attacking, the number one thing that you can do is train for it. Of course, that's before the battle happened. But that's the number way that militaries and military leaders help soldiers have confidence in their capabilities, is to train them, train as you fight, as we say. Train them for as realistic a scenario as possible, so they feel like even if somebody's inside, you know, a concrete building or dug into the urban terrain, they prepared for it in what weapons they're bringing, what formations they're bringing, that they have that confidence, right? So it always goes back to that belief of confidence and control, and in their, that builds that morale and keeps motivation high. Like, oh, okay, go into the urban terrain. I'm ready for it. And when they're attacking into it, they've prepared for that. And they have tactics that they can use and different vehicles and the use of fires, which, you know, that shock and all that people talk about does impact a defender, and especially in urban terrains, ability to maintain their mental and emotional states of being able to take what's coming.
I suppose a connected question would be, how do you maintain the morale of, I suppose, a military force, especially in a counterinsurgency situation? I live in Belfast, where, you know, we the British Army was engaged for nearly 30 years, and morale probably was a major problem for many, many operatives of the British Army during that time. So how do you keep people going in a very, very morale-sapping situation?
Yeah, so I hate to use just a blanket term, but it really does come in situations like that, and like what we were in 2008, where you had just a small percentage of the population you were living amongst trying to kill you every day. It can really sap, because it's, again, because it goes back to the soldiers not believing they have any ability in their confidence to win, to survive, when, you know, when every piece of trash could be a bomb that somebody laid there to attack you. The biggest thing is, of course, is the leadership in keeping and monitoring morale, because morale and motivation does ebb and flow based on the events of the day, news from the world, news from, you know, two streets over. It's on the leadership to monitor that, and almost like a gardener, water to what needs water and give more sun. And then really in counterinsurgencies, it is the understanding of what will work that really militaries have struggled with. And a lot of lessons from places like Belfast then translated to other counterinsurgencies about how to still maintain the just actions of the group, which then gives you some connections to the population, which is your tool to expose that one, that very small counterinsurgency that's trying to attack you or the host government. So it's complex, but it really, in really tough situations like that, the leader, all the way down to the bottom corporal or the general, has so much ownership. And I say this a lot, that if you're a leader in the military, whether you're a corporal or general, you're in the business of team building, cohesion, morale, and motivation, more than most people can even imagine.
And my final question, John, is where can people learn more about your work and get your book?
Sure. So I'm on just about every social media platform, especially Twitter at Spencer Guard. I have a website where all my publications and all my books are, johnspenceronline.com. You can, of course, find them on Amazon, both Connected Soldiers and my new book coming out called Understanding Urban Warfare. But if they just do a Google, they'll find me.
John, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.